Friday edition of Smith & Jones, final edition of Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. And what a wild last, 16, 18 hours it has been if we rewind the clock back to last night. The Toronto Raptors right around, 8:10, 8:15-ish with the number 4 pick. Jalen Suggs is on the board. And the Toronto Raptors don't go with Jalen Suggs. Scotty Barnes, the newest Toronto Raptor, and we heard from him last night. We heard from him on a press conference today. I had a chance to chat with Nick Nurse, and we're going to play that interview for you on today's show. So I'll go one-on-one with the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, and we will break down the Scotty Barnes acquisition and much more from last night. Cade Cunningham going number one in the NBA draft when Alvin Williams joins us in around 10 or 15 minutes. But we have breaking news that has happened in the last 20 or 30 minutes, as it is also the Major League Baseball trade deadline day, and let's call it the home opener. I know they've had two different home openers, one down in Florida, one in Buffalo, and now a third in Toronto. But for the first time in nearly 700 days, 670 to be exact, the Toronto Blue Jays are back home in Toronto at Rogers Centre on trade deadline day, and Jose Barrios is now the newest member of the Toronto Blue Jays. The Jays striking a deal with the Minnesota Twins, and they gave up a lot to get him, but the two-time All-Star is now a member of the Jays as Toronto pushes towards the postseason. And to break it all down right off the bat, Jonesy, we bring into the conversation baseball editor at Sportsnet.ca, co-host of the At the Letters podcast, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ben, thanks again for joining us this week. Second time, but understandably so because it's such a big day, and this is a big-time deal for the Jays. But as I said, quite a haul that they had to give up to get Barrios as well.
Man, what a deal. This is a real baseball trade that we're talking about here, where the Jays get a frontline pitcher and they send two top prospects back. I mean, it's honestly a bit of a surprise to me that they paid such a high price for Barrios, but he's a transformative pitcher for their rotation. And for now, for the postseason, if they make it, for 2022, he makes their rotation a lot better.
Ben, why are you surprised in that sense? I mean, you, like we always say, you got to give up something to get something. Did you think that they weren't ready to have him now? I mean, some guys you get at a time when you're ready to win. Is this not the? I mean, he's a great pitcher, but is this not the right time for him? It seems like it caught you, but it's a big deal and it's a good deal if you're looking at winning.
100%. They're a better team with him. And the reason it surprises me is because the cost is high. And so given where the Jays are with 51 wins and, you know, in that competition for a wild card berth, what I thought was we were going to see more of these rental type trades where the cost is a bit lower and you improve your team, but you don't necessarily improve it this dramatically. And what they've done is they have made their team a lot better. Now they've also helped themselves out for next year. And in doing so, they've paid a very high price. Austin Martin is someone who is considered a top prospect in baseball, very good bat-to-ball skills, likely a very high degree of certainty that he'll be a major league regular at some point, if not better than that. And then you're talking about Woods Richardson, a pitcher who struggled this year, but who, again, is considered a very good prospect. So get more, and in this case, they gave up a lot, and they got a lot.
Speaking with Ben Nicholson-Smith, baseball editor, Sportsnet.ca. Ben, you might have just answered my question 20 seconds ago. Did they give up too much? As good as Barrios is he worth the haul that the Jays gave up?
Well, a lot of that will be determined by where he can lead them. If they can make it to the playoffs this season, then it's almost impossible to hate on this deal because you have a playoff run in 2021. And then at that point, you've also got 2022 to play with and you're feeling pretty good about it. If on the other hand, Barrios is someone who pitches well for them, but they don't make it to the playoffs, then you start looking at 2022 as a year where you kind of need to see him realize some of that potential. So, you know, in talking to people around the game so far, just in the last hour or so, some people are saying that's a really high price to pay. But look, this is a front office that at some times has been criticized for being too conservative. And what we've seen in 2021 is anything but that. When you think about adding George Springer and Marcus Semien and now Jose Barrios, this team is a lot better because of those moves.
Hey, Ben, I'm of the school that at some point the future morphs into the present. I mean, you know, it's nice to build for the future, but at some point you've got to recognize that. Is this too early? I was kind of hinting at this earlier. Is it too early in the timetable? And then what does it say to the rest of the guys in the clubhouse? Because we talked to Buck about this a while back, Eric and I, that it says something to those guys in the clubhouse, too, when you make a deal of this magnitude, doesn't it?
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, it's kind of nice actually being here, and we'll get to get some in-person reaction today. You might hear the background noise from Rogers Center where I am right now. And those players are starting to arrive, and some of them come across the field. We haven't spoken to them yet, but we'll have the chance to do that. And there's no question that this message to the entire organization, from the players to the ticket takers, is this is the time to win. The time to win is right now. There's no ambiguity about it. There's no hedging of bets. And it's not to say they're going all in and being reckless about it, because, again, Barrios does have control. But they're saying this is a good team. And I really think, I mean, this team is underperformed. I think they're a very good baseball team. Even without Barrios, I think they're a very good team. But the reality is, you know, the record doesn't reflect that just yet, because they've blown those losses and they've had the frustrating bullpen issues at times. So now they're going to have one of those runs to finish this year really strong. And clearly they believe that's possible with this group.
Speaking with Ben Nicholson-Smith, Ben, I was going to make note of the fact that you're either standing on a subway platform or you're at Rogers Center. So it's great to hear the noise in the background.
Yes,
It's the sounds of summer finally coming, even though we're halfway through summer. But it's nice to hear it in the background. Tell me if I'm wrong for breaking it down this way as we continue to sort of look at this trade and why it makes sense for the Jays. And it's clear when you get, at least for now, we don't know what it'll be like 3 years from now, 5 years from now, but for now, you're getting the best player in the deal, a player that is obviously in the majors now, making an impact now, a two-time All-Star. Are you, if you're the Jays, willing to make this move? And maybe if you follow my very basic, very amateur line of thinking here, we're willing to give up Woods Richardson because, well, we might be replacing him with a better arm in Barrios. And you know what? Considering where we stand up the middle on this team and with our infield depth overall, not just on our current roster, but in terms of, you know, other prospects and whatnot, as good as Austin Martin is, we can afford to give him up in a sense. So from that standpoint, are you dealing from a position of strength in your depth to acquire exactly what you need right now?
You know, I think that's a fair way to frame it, right? Because they definitely do have a lot of young position players coming up. And even after trading Austin Martin, first rounder last year, of course, they still have Kevin Smith, who's having a great year at AAA. They've got Aurelvis Martinez, who's emerging in A-ball as just a huge prospect. Jordan Groshans, another top 100 prospect. And all those guys play up the middle. So that's to go along with Bo Bichette, of course, at the major league level. So you do have some strength there, and there's a reasonable case to be made from dealing from that strength. Of course, you got to pick the right player, and you've got to have a really good internal sense of what it is that you're giving up. Because if you think that Austin Martin is Alex Bregman in 2 years, you can't make this deal. Like, you absolutely can't. But it says to me that they don't think he's Alex Bregman. And they're not going to say that publicly. But, you know, so much of it comes down to those internal evaluations. And they've had the chance to know Simeon Woods Richardson now for 2 years, and Austin Martin for one full year since drafting him.
Ben, is this also a shift in thinking to kind of shore up or try to help the bullpen? You get another arm that can go deep into the game and maybe try to take some of the strain off the bullpen that's had issues. You know, heck, we're just going to ride the horse and see if this guy can give us 6-7 innings before we have to get to the bullpen.
I think it's a good point. And, you know, so often we put it all on the bullpen. And, you know, the bullpen has let this team down. Well, if the starting rotation is going out there and giving you 6 or 7 innings, the bullpen is in a much better spot. And with guys like Barrios, and Robbie Ray, and Ryu, Manoah about to come back, this rotation is starting to look pretty good for 2021. And that can take some of the toll off of the bullpen, which, of course, they augmented with Brad Hand. Wouldn't be surprised if they make another move in the next 3 hours here for the bullpen or even for a position player. They're definitely not done talking and making those calls. But I think it's a very good point to connect those things and say that, hey, you improved the rotation. That actually takes some of the toll off of the bullpen as well.
speaking with Ben Nicholson Smith. Ben, I don't know if I've ever asked, you know, well, you certainly, or Shy or Buck or Pat this question, but let me use the basketball analogy and go back to the Raptors a couple of seasons ago and load management, Kawhi Leonard and everything else, and minutes restrictions that we always hear about with players, and whether that's coming from the training staff and the medical staff, or is that the coach's decision? Is it management? How much of the decision-making regarding whether you're keeping a starter deep into the game, whether it's the sixth inning, seventh inning, the eighth inning, going above the 100 pitches, 110 pitches, how much of that is solely on Charlie Montoyo, and how much is coming from either the training staff, the management, et cetera? Is it solely his call, or are we talking about a hierarchy of decision makers and input coming in even before the first pitch is thrown?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of input, and he's the guy who makes the call, and of course, with that comes the criticism that goes with any managerial or coaching decision. But the front office definitely has a say. Pete Walker, the pitching coach, definitely has a say. And within that, you're taking into account training staff and of course, what the player himself says. So, you know, at this point in the season, though, it's really getting interesting because with someone like Ryu, he likes his extra rest. With Barrios, they didn't acquire him to micromanage his workload and to plan 5 years in advance. I'm not saying they're going to grind him into the ground, but, you know, we might see one of those situations where they let him work through a lineup three times and where they let him work out of trouble a little bit because he was brought here to be, if not an ace, a frontline co-ace with Ryu and with Robbie Ray. And they're going to need those guys, especially in a stretch of 25 games in 24 days. They're going to need those guys to take on a pretty big load.
Ben, last one for you here. You touched on it briefly a couple of minutes ago, but I'll just ask more directly. Do you anticipate or expect anything else here in the next few hours, or do you think this could be it for the Jays?
I do. I think we're going to see another trade. I'm not sure whether we see two more, but I think we see one more trade in the next couple of hours. And there are still needs. They could still add a reliever. They could still add, I'm told they're interested in Yan Gomes. So they're looking at catching. And also you've got a bat, you know, like an outfielder would be a possibility for this team. We know they had interest in Joey Gallo. So, you know, it's going to be super interesting. And I don't think we're done yet today, guys. So it should be a lot of fun to follow.
Well, Ben, thanks for jumping on right off the top to break it down for us and simply enjoy the game tonight and finally seeing this team back home on their real home turf as they get set for KC tonight at 7 o'clock. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, anytime. It should be great, guys. I can't wait to watch a baseball game, and trade deadline makes it even more interesting. So my pleasure, and enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks, Ben.
There is Ben Nicholson Smith, baseball editor at Sportsnet.ca, co-host of the At the Letters podcast. Jays and Royals tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern, of course, right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet Now. And it'll be great to hear Ben Wagner back on the mic in the radio booth tonight for the call of the game with the Royals and Jays as Toronto pulls off a big-time deal on Major League Baseball trade deadline day, which comes one day after, of course, the NBA draft, which went last night. Cade Cunningham going number one to the Detroit Pistons, and the Toronto Raptors with the fourth pick take Scotty Barnes out of Florida State. A surprise for a lot of folks, but the Raptors certainly excited about this guy. He clearly was their guy, as many people thought that the Raptors might go the way of Jalen Suggs, who ends up going to Orlando instead at number five, and Scotty Barnes, 6'9", a 7'3 wingspan. I saw a video, Jonesy, that the Raptors put out today, and our guy Johnny Lee, one of the Raptor trainers and strength and conditioning guys, was measuring the hands and the fingers, what's the official term, I guess, just his hand width.
Yeah, like the 40, metrics, right? The
45 inches or something. It was like it was crazy. It was like it was a ridiculous number. Ridiculous. Anyways. We bring into the conversation to break down Scotty Barnes and last night and much more our friend, our colleague, former Toronto Raptor, NBA analyst at Sportsnet, Alvin Williams. Alvin, thanks as always for the time.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
All hey, good, Al. Good to hear you, man.
Good to have you on, man. Hey, Al, were you surprised last night did you have an inkling that the Raptors might lean this way? What were your initial thoughts?
No surprises at all. Like, it's the draft, and the way the draft is conducted now and the different pieces of the draft when it comes to sports science, it comes to the metrics, it comes to the analytics. It's not just the eye test any longer. So the things that we normally look at, we can watch a whole college season. We can watch a player play for a whole season or 2 years and just never know what goes on behind the scenes. So it's no surprises. But, you know, not knowing much about Scotty, I did make a call. I have a friend who's on the coaching staff at Florida State, and they rave about this guy. And now, after hearing what they were saying about him, I can see exactly why the Raptors picked him and chose him. And it makes sense to me.
Al, it's funny. You said something there that really kind of resonated with me. We had a lot of people in the Twitter sphere upset that Jalen Suggs wasn't picked. And it made me chuckle. It brought me back to the very first ever Raptors draft when Ed O'Bannon had just come off national TV winning the title with Jim Herrick in UCLA, and everybody wanted Ed O'Bannon, and the Raptors chose Stoudemire, and people booed, and you know, they forget that Damon was in the Final Four the year before and he turned out to be Rookie of the Year. There's more to it than meets the eye, Al. I mean, there's dinners, there's character, and you know, we always talk about, like, when I get a Villanova kid that's played for Jay Wright or played for Rolly, I know the character. I know what kind of kid I'm getting. I know that Marquette, when Buzz was there, I got grinders. Like, you know what kind of program puts out a certain type of kid. And Leonard Hamilton's program does that. I mean, you look at those guys, and people were upset, but there's way more to this than we see.
Yeah, no, for sure. And real quick, Jonesy, I gotta throw Steve Lapis in there. Steve would kill me. That was my coach
yes.
at Villanova.
I forgot.
Rolly and,
he was in between. So, yeah.
But you're right. You know the character. You know what you're getting. And the one piece you do not know you get is how they can perform. You can see in college, but it's a big jump from college to pros. But the character, their background, their attitudes, those things are the things you find out through the interview process, through the time you spend, through all your homework you're collecting, all the information, all the intel. So you really have to dive deep into all of those things. And us as fans and spectators, we know what we want and what we like. And even as my experience as a scout with the Raptors and the Sixers, like you put so much energy into a player, or you like them emotionally, you get tied to them, you hear information, and you want your team to draft those people. But sometimes those picks aren't the fit, and it doesn't go into the long-term plan, sometimes the short-term plan, or whatever the case may be. So that selection, and it's no guarantees. It's no equation. There's nothing behind it that can, you know, is no guarantees behind it. So that's the other part. So we as fans, we're going to boo, we're going to be upset. And then guess what? 5 years later, that person may pan out who we like. Now we're the experts. But it's so far from that exact, like I said, there's no equation behind selecting the right person.
Speaking with Alvin Williams, and quickly before I get any hate mail, I have to correct what I said earlier when I said 45 inches. If the man can stretch his thumb and his finger 45 inches, then he's a giant.
I was listening. I was like, wow.
I'm thinking I must be mixing up my centimeters and my inches. I'm not a very smart man sometimes, Alvin. It's pretty obvious. But if there's anybody out there that can stretch their thumb and their pinky finger 45 inches, then, you know, contact me, because I'll quit my job right now and become your agent. Al, tell me if I'm being too, like, too philosophical, too kind of like lovey-dovey with this type of analysis. When I listen to Scotty Barnes, I've never met the dude. I've listened to a 6-minute press conference Zoom call last night and a 10-minute one today, and I've seen clips of him on the Raptors handle and maybe in pre-draft interviews and whatnot. So that's all I know about the guy in terms of his personality. He seems to come across as an extremely high-energy, positive, likable guy with the right attitude. And how much, especially as a youngster, let alone just as a human being, how much can the right attitude make coming into a game, a locker room, the plane, around the team, and just having that type of mindset, and not just being an a-hole or being a curmudgeon or having a chip on the shoulder? He just seems like a likable dude that you want to pull for.
No, that's it. And I mentioned that I talked to one of the coaches there, and the same thing. It's great guy, winning attitude. Turns defense into offense. comes with energy. And when he was saying it, I'm thinking of back in our day of a JYD, right? Like a JYD bringing that. And although JYD may not have averaged 20 points or whatever, the energy that he brought every day, the attitude that he brought every day, those things in a locker room from the start, because before you go into the court, you got to start in the locker room. Then you got to go to the practice. Then you got to go to the court. So those things that can help shape a team, that attitude, if you have 12, 15 guys, maybe 17 guys coming in and out, and all of those different egos, all those different reputations, all of these things, because every day something can bring something different. But if you have a consistent energy, personality, attitude, that can carry a team so far. And coaches, GMs, execs, owners, they know the value of coming to work every day. We all do know the value of coming to work every day with somebody you want to be next to. So that starts right there. So you can never undervalue that aspect. And then the basketball, that'll take care of itself. Still a young guy, whatever the case may be. But everything you heard, and you're not lovey-dovey, you're not anything, those things are very critical. And it's appreciated, and I think it should be considered when you are having these type of draft picks, especially early on.
Al, so how much goes into that? Take us through your draft time, because we know there's everything from psychological profiles to dinners. They watch how you treat the ball boy, the office assistant, the parking attendant, like all of those things. I heard a crazy story when I, you know, as a basketball guy that back in when Dean Smith was coaching the Olympic team, he asked guys something simple when it was time for a drink to walk to the water fountain. And he paid attention to who listened to him on something simple like that and who blew him off. And he was registering those things. Talk to me about the more than meets the eye stuff, Al, because you've been through it and they've been watching you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know when I was getting drafted, my dad suggested, and I had an advantage because my dad was involved in sports. So I remember going to the draft, the workouts. My dad always made me wear a jacket and a tie. You know, coming out of college, you're like, you don't want to wear a jacket and a tie. Like, I don't even know how to tie a tie. So I remember him saying, this is a job interview. You have to conduct yourself a certain way. The other piece, character, all the respect, that was always there. That was the way I was raised. But there is so much more that they look at. And if you're not that special player, if you're not LeBron James, you have to do the other things. You have to prove a point. It's an interview. You're trying to achieve a lifelong dream. So, hey, whatever I need to do, if I'm going to walk to the water fountain, if I'm going to wear this tie, whether it's a clip-on, whatever, if I can do this and it can guarantee me an opportunity to fulfill a dream, then I'm going to do it. And I think when you start putting that emphasis behind your goals and your attempt to achieve your goals, people have to pay respect. People have to do it. And I'll say even before, after me, DeMar DeRozan was one of those guys. I remember once again being with the Raptors. DeMar DeRozan's game wasn't polished. He wasn't a great shooter. He was quiet, but he was such a great listener and his personality was so good. And that's why DeMar DeRozan is who he is today, because we've seen athletic people. We've seen people that play like DeMar, whatever case may be. But DeMar's approach, his attitude, his character, and his respect level for people before him, this is the person he is. And I think all of those things, you've got to tie it in. You have to consider it. And more than often, those are the people that's going to be more successful, not just on the court, but in life. You see them getting coaching jobs. You see them getting executive jobs. You see them doing much more things outside of the sport. So that is very critical for those pieces when you're evaluating a player.
Speaking with Alvin Williams. Alvin, let's shift attention away from the Toronto Raptors. We've got a couple of minutes left with you. Big deal yesterday. Let's even forget about the draft, because everything else, I'm not going to say went as expected, but there weren't, I don't think, a huge amount of surprises beyond what the Raptors did. And, you know, kudos to all the guys that got drafted last night. I love seeing Cade Cunningham embracing, the Pistons and going to the Motor City, et cetera. But prior to the draft, the blockbuster deal that goes down with Russell Westbrook being sent to the Lakers for Kyle Kuzma, Caldwell Pope, Montrezl Harrell, and the number 22 pick. What about this trade, Al, and then trying to project looking forward to next season with Russell Westbrook alongside Anthony Davis and LeBron James?
I think going into it, you know what you're getting. And that's the biggest thing. You know what you're getting from the individuals. Now the biggest thing is, how do they marry? Like, how do you connect these three pieces? You know, we live in a game today where you have to have a big three. And sometimes it doesn't always work. It's a lot of things that go into it. Lakers, we know they want to win championships. So is this the championship's ingredients? Is this the equation for a championship? I'm not sure. But I do like, from a standpoint, it will allow LeBron James to fall back a little bit. When you have someone like Russell Westbrook, who can be on go all the time, he has that energy. He brings a dimension to the team that you're not going to get from anywhere else. He brings an attitude. He brings an approach. He brings an aggression. So I do like that combination of AD can stay healthy, and LeBron. But you need to have some shooters around, and that's the pieces that's going to come after. They have to figure that out. But I'm a guy that believes that where LeBron is in his career, Russell Westbrook could be a great piece for him to assist him being finishing out his career. And I'm talking about finishing out his career. I'm talking about LeBron James.
Al, is this an admission by the Lakers? Maybe not openly LeBron, but hey, man, I'm on the 15th hole, and I need some help here. You know, we've seen, I mean, they won in the bubble, but the year before, LeBron got injured. They missed the playoffs. He got injured late this year. They missed the playoffs. Like, I'm not saying he doesn't have that gear that he used to. Maybe he can't get there all the time. Is this an admission that, man, we need to help him? Because the Lakers were very active. I mean, you heard a lot of rumors with the Lakers, and if they're trying to get another chip for LeBron, how much help does he need?
Yeah, I think it is. And if you look at it, 2 out of 3 years, LeBron James has substantial injuries, you know, the ankle injury, the groin injury. We haven't seen that from LeBron James. And with him being out, as long as he's out with these injuries, every year the team is taking a dip. I know they were in the playoffs. They were in the top four when he hurt his groin, and then, you know, they didn't make the playoffs. And then this year they were in the top three when he hurt his ankle, and they ended up having to play in a play-in game. So LeBron James carries so much weight. When he's not there, the team suffers. So if it's a case where a scenario where LeBron James gets hurt, can you have a player that can carry the load along with the AD and things like that? So I think it is an admission from that standpoint. And you have to face reality. You know, no one's going to play at that level of LeBron James carry teams, you know, that much longer. It hasn't been done. He's already exceeded anything that we've already seen. So I agree with you right there, Jonesy. And Russell Westbrook, if he's not that person to do it, he definitely will bring the energy. He definitely will bring the force. And he brings that respect level that will make a team be elevated to some degree.
Al, I was going to let you go here, but before I do, listen, I'm not sure that anything has changed, but I'll ask the question anyways in case we don't get a chance to ask you again before things get real bonkers next week. What do you think happens with Kyle Lowry?
Oh, I just talked to Kyle. He said he's going to retire, man. He said he doesn't want to go through it anymore. No, I don't know, man. I'm here in Philly, and someone just told me he's asking to come to Philly, and I don't know, man. I've talked to Kyle early before he went on a little vacation. I haven't talked to him since. Punk hasn't called me back, so I don't know what's going on with him. I'm going to check him about that, but I don't know. I think he's in a great position. It seems like to me, anytime there's some type of uncertainty, he ends up back in Toronto. So my fingers are crossed. My fingers are crossed that, you know, the Toronto is the best landing place for him. I know he loves Toronto, but at the same time, he's looking for other things as well. So I have no clue to answer your question. I apologize for falling short on that answer.
No, if you don't know, you don't know. Nothing to apologize for.
Al, Eric and I, and I think I speak for Eric, we want to thank you for all your time that you've been available to us. Not that these conversations are going to stop. It's just that the rest of the listeners ain't going to hear them. So we might have to get a little side hustle, a little pay per listen kind of thing with Smith, Jones, and Williams. And we need one more in there to make it a law firm. How about dollars?
I like it. I like it. I appreciate you guys. you know, calling me and inviting me to you guys, because, you know, you just guys don't have a clue. Like, sometimes being here, Philly, sometimes you get stuck. And when you get an opportunity where it's 5 or 10 minutes, man, to talk to friends and talk to friends about something else you love, it's a blessing. So I really appreciate it. You guys don't know what you do for me on these days where I get the call and say, are you available? So I really appreciate it, man.
Well, Al, yeah, hope to see you in person, man.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Al, very all soon. The best, and all the best to the family too.
Same to you guys. Take care.
All right, Al.
There is Alvin Williams. Former Toronto Raptor, longtime NBA analyst at Sportsnet. And we'll continue talking about last night's NBA draft, as I had a chance to go one-on-one with Nick Nurse. We will play that interview for you when we continue. And we'll also keep our eye on the Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball with the MLB trade deadline today as well, counting down to also the first pitch at Rogers Center at 7 o'clock tonight. Oh, and yeah, if anything happens in hockey, we'll drop that knowledge and information to you as well. A very busy day on the final day of Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith and Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Busy day today. Thanks again to Ben Nicholson-Smith for joining us to break down the Blue Jays' acquisition of Jose Berríos, giving up Austin Martin and Simeon Woods-Richardson, keeping an eye on the Jays to see if they do anything else before the deadline comes and goes as the Jays get set for KC tonight at 7 o'clock. And also thanks to Alvin Williams breaking down last night's NBA draft with the Toronto Raptors selecting Scottie Barnes, number 4. Last night, I had a chance to catch up with head coach Nick Nurse one-on-one to discuss Scottie Barnes.
Nick, you've talked at great length about versatile players, two-way players, and it would seem like you may have got, if not the best, certainly one of the best in this draft class. Why was Scottie Barnes the guy for this team, and how happy were you collectively to be able to pick this guy at number 4?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty unique, Eric. I do. I think, you know, you hit it on the head with your question. We like the athleticism, the ability to be multi-positional, multifaceted, play both ends, right, is really important. And then he, you know, he kind of comes in and he's very engaging. He's intelligent. You talk to his coaches and the people, you know, talk about how great a teammate and how good a attitude and how much energy he brings and has and things. So you kind of like, well, that's kind of hard to pass up now that he's not the perfect player and he's very young and all those kind of things. But there's sure a lot that points to a very talented guy that will be a system fit for us.
You know, Nick, to that point, turning 20 years old in just a couple of days, I mean, obviously a great birthday present for him. I read a quote going into this. Leonard Hamilton said, the cake is still in the oven, but it's rising quickly. How much do you expect this cake to rise and the talent that is there for this guy when he actually is fully cooked and ready to go?
Well, I tell you what, it's really funny that Leonard said that, because Coach Hamilton, man, what a great coach and great guy. But one of my better friends from Iowa was on his staff a long time ago. And I talked to him, of course, and then Coach Hamilton called me up. And by the time I got done with that phone call, he had a lot more of those kind of sayings and about 15 others. And the praise that he was heaping on him, you know, it was kind of, again, unique that he had good moments with the kid, and a good season and a good, you know, he said he recruited him as ninth grader and he's known him a long time, even though I only coached him 1 year. So I think that's good, man. You know, you want a coach to throw out all those superlatives and be on his side, and especially such a great coach as Leonard Hamilton.
You know, one of the things that stands out, Nick, as well, and I would assume that you must love this as a coach, is seeing a guy that came off the bench and as a sixth man, and he had opportunities, I'm sure, coming out of high school to go to other programs, to go to other schools where he might have been the star, might have been the guy. And he chose a program that was known for being a deep team and being a team that rolls out maybe 22, 25 minutes. You're not going to log heavy time. It's going to be about the collective unit, not about the individual. And he wanted that. And how much do you think that impacted him as a player, let alone clearly showing what kind of individual he is?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because one of the things that he told me when I was asking about, you know, how'd your college visits go, and and how'd you end up at Florida State? And he started going through all this stuff. And what he said was, I went to Florida State and it felt like the best team, like the best teammates and the best, you know, it just felt like a family. And it was a really easy choice for me in the end, because that's what stood out for me the most. And that's what I wanted. So good question.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, no. When you look at him and just his attitude as well, and I know you might have touched on this just a couple of minutes ago briefly in saying he's just an infectious personality. He seems like a good guy. I've never met him. I've talked to him for 3 minutes on a Zoom call. Yeah. But he does seem like he's got that kind of energy, that enthusiasm, that he's the type of person you want to be around. And does that not only make you root for a guy, but make you want to coach a guy and think about how he's going to fit not just on your floor, but in your locker room and on your plane and just with the guys overall?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think most sports and really basketball especially is so energy-based, right? The games are a lot about energy. Practices are a lot about putting in your daily work each and every day, you know, 12 months, you know, you gotta have a motor and you gotta have a full tank of gas. And that's important. I think it helps a team in so many ways, and it helps an individual get better in so many ways. So we'll see, but it sure seems like he's high energy and goes. And that should help him a lot. He's going to need to improve and take some time and all that stuff. But if his energy levels and work rate are going to be good, he should have success.
Hey, Nick, I know he's only been a Toronto Raptor for a couple of hours. Let's maybe ask this question again come training camp, let alone preseason and regular season, et cetera. But I'll still ask the question anyways. Are you kind of salivating at the possibilities, especially with your creativity and what you like to do, of having a guy that's sort of positionless, can guard multiple positions, play multiple positions, be out there alongside an OG or a Pascal, and just the versatility overall that your lineup now has with yet another weapon?
Yeah, I mean, we like players that play both ends, yep. And we like players that are versatile, and we just try to keep coaching them so they can do all things. We like guys that can handle. We like guys that can play pick and roll. We like guys that can set pick and roll, guys that can switch and guard on the perimeter, guys that can switch and guard inside, and everybody rebounds, right? Everybody chips in and rebounds. So I think it's a good fit.
There is Nick Nurse, head coach of the Toronto Raptors. Appreciate his time, as I had a chance to chat with him after the draft last night to break down the acquisition, the number 4 selection of Scotty Barnes from Florida State, the newest member of the Toronto Raptors. Jonesy, again, I think this guy's got a chance to be really good and fit into the system the Raptors have, I guess, as I spoke to Nick about with that versatility.
Pick. You know, long, athletic. And you know, I got into it with some of the people on Twitter yesterday when I said, give me my formula for a complete player, right? Give me a willing teammate, a guy who a defensive mindset, wants to play the game the right way, plays for the team. Okay, his offense isn't great. I'll work on that. I'll have a complete player before a guy that drops 30 every night, because I don't know if that guy wants to play the other end. I don't know if he wants to share. And people thought I was taking a shot at Jalen Suggs. I certainly was not. Jalen Suggs is going to have a huge impact with Orlando because he's young, and that team is young, and they're looking for a direction. But I like this pick. I mean, I like this pick, and let's see what it's like long term. You know, we talked to Alvin, sometimes people get caught up in the eye test and the short term, and Jalen Suggs is with Gonzaga and they saw him in the Final Four. And I'm willing to defer to the people that do this for a living and study every inch and leave no stone unturned to make sure they are getting the right person. That being said, it's still, an inexact science, but I like this pick. That's all I'll say.
Let's take the break. Thanks again to Nick Nurse for joining us on the show and stepping aside for a couple of minutes to chat with me last night to discuss the acquisition, the draft selection of Scotty Barnes, and free agency about to begin in the National Basketball Association next week, and MLB trade deadline today. We've already had a big deal involving the Toronto Blue Jays, and maybe more to come. And if it happens in the next 15 minutes, we'll let you know. Otherwise, we've got you covered the rest of the day with Writer's Block at 2 o'clock, Baseball Central later today, 5 to 7, leading into the Jays down at Rogers Center, taking on the Royals at 7 o'clock. The final segment of Smith & Jones is next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith and Jones. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. What a day it has been, and, well, Jonesy, what a last 14 months it has been. Very busy day today with Major League Baseball trade deadline day. The Toronto Blue Jays going out and making a big-time trade, a significant trade. Jose Berríos coming from Minnesota. Austin Martin, Simeon Woods-Richardson going the other way. Ben Nicholson-Smith broke it down for us and analyzed the whole thing as the Jays give up two big-time prospects in return for the two-time All-Star who is under contract for another year. And the Jays clearly making a push for the postseason, whether it be the division, which is quite a ways off, but certainly that wild card race. And finally back home at 7 o'clock tonight against the Kansas City Royals, back at Rogers Center for the first time in 670 days. Ben Wagner back on the mic. More baseball talk coming later today on Baseball Central at 5 o'clock and also next hour as well when Dan Shulman is on writer's block with Deitch and Ennis. So again, thanks to Ben Nicholson-Smith for joining us and Alvin Williams, Nick Nurse as well. And as I said, busy day, busy last 14 months. This show, folks, is officially coming to an end today. We've mentioned it a couple times over the course of the week, but not made a big deal about it because you know what? This show was only ever supposed to be, Jonesy, sort of a temporary thing, a fill-in in a sense. When we had a conversation with our now former boss, Dave Cadeau, back in like late May, early June last year, it was, hey, can you guys come on the air and do a show for us? And we're thinking maybe just a 1 hour, and it's going to be a lot of basketball probably, but we want you to be able to talk baseball, hockey, football, tennis, golf, et cetera, hit it all. And just, I don't know, let's call it Smith and Jones, and you guys will just do an hour, and we'll kind of tap into your knowledge and your chemistry and the years that you guys have worked together. And the first thing that we said was, well, yeah, but, like, how long are we doing this for? And the answer was, yeah, it's kind of like permanently temporary. It's going to be 3 months. It might be 6 months. It might be 9 months. It might be 12 months. And as it turns out, it's 14 months. But it was only ever supposed to be temporary, this fill-in, in a sense, because of COVID and the pandemic. And maybe the fact that the show is ending today is actually a positive sign that, fingers crossed, I know some numbers are starting to rise a bit, and I know that Delta variant is flying around out there, but the fact that the Jays are back home, we think that the Raptors and the Leafs are going to be back home and all the other Canadian hockey franchises, etc. And the fact that some normalcy is starting to return, feels like we're starting to kind of turn a little bit of a corner and getting a little bit more normal in the world in general, which means a little bit more of a normal world for the station and for you and I, in that Smith and Jones might not be on the air Monday to Friday, 1 to 2 anymore, but we're still going to be very busy with the Raptor season coming up. We're still going to be busy with NBA coverage and Raptors coverage and everything else. And now we get to maybe step back again, let go of our little temporary show that we had, allow the station to get back to doing its regular thing, and you and I get some time off to go work on our terrible golf games.
Well, Eric, and I'll say this to all our listeners, it's great interacting. You know, you and I will still be doing that, you know, in social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, that, like, that's not going to stop. But it was great. You know, to use the sports analogy, it was great being called in off the bench. You know, that's what it was. And they tapped us on the shoulder and said, get in there, you know, get in there, guard somebody, make a shot, play defense, rebound. And, you know, you kind of get in there and you do it, and you look to the bench and they say, no, keep going. So keep playing. Yeah, keep playing. And you know, I guess we're maybe seceding to the starters now, to the starters. That is the regular form, fingers crossed, of life as we know it, for the station, for sports teams, hopefully for people in their everyday lives as they, you know, the vaccinations, rates rise and, you know, we're still being careful with everything, but you know, I really enjoyed doing the show. I really enjoyed interacting with our listeners. You know, our partnership is, you know, it's been 20 plus years. I don't know, we're finishing each other's sentences. We think like each other. It's kind of scary, but I know you got a list, but to all the people that were in the game with us, setting screens, diving for loose balls, you know, taking passes, making shots with us, you know, it's great. I won't lie. I will miss that part, but it means that we get a little bit of a break, and it means that things are going back to normal. It means that we'll still talk to people with our Raptors coverage, and you know, that part of it is good. And I enjoyed this, and like I said, you know, thanks to the people at Fan 590 and Sportsnet for, you know, giving us this opportunity.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic. And like I say, 14 months. I didn't miss a show in 14 months. I think you missed one for some other prior commitments. So the fact that we were able to come on every single day and have this platform, and maybe the best baseball analogy, Jonesy, and you said it best in terms of coming off the bench. We were the 1-2 tandem of Garth Orange and Rance Mullinix back in the day, right? Like, one of those two is getting tapped, and whether it's Rance Mullinix with the big goggles or Garth Orange with that bizarre, awkward stance in the box and the way he held the bat and with his swing, Garth Orange and Rance Mullinix here. We are the Darnell Coles just coming off the bench for a second here and filling in. But as I say again, it's hopefully a sign that the world is getting a little bit more normal, that this permanently temporary show is officially coming to an end here, and we are into our final minute. We do have to shout out a big-time thanks to our producer, who, by the way, took the last week off. Nice planning there on his part. Matt Marchese, and a huge shout-out as well to our crew. The guys have been holding it down at the station as well, doing the yeoman's work in the trenches, and Derek Brandeo and Lance Kennedy. Many others subbed in, filled in, helped out over the course of the last 14 months as well. Danielle, JR, Sam, Boffo. Of course, today, our man Ryan Fabro, and shout it again to, as Jonesy said, to all the folks at Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, the Fan, from Dave Cadot to Dan Tolman to Ryan Fabro and Jason Rozon and Greg Sansoni and the rest. So this is it, folks, but it's not it for us. We're going to be back in, what, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, with a ton of Raptors coverage and a ton of NBA coverage on both TV and radio, and we ain't going anywhere. You can't get rid of us that easily. You just might not be here every day, but we're going to be around a lot and look forward to doing much more in the months and years to come right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Thanks to all of you for tuning in to Smith & Jones.